Hey y'all. So when it comes to bodies, weight loss is not really something that I'm pursuing right now. But as you know, one of Vanessa's family members has been taking a GLP-1 medication, and it's worked really well for him. So if that is part of your journey, you should check out the Row Body Program. Row provides access to the most popular weight loss shots on the market. Row's partner handles all the insurance paperwork to help get the medication covered. If eligible for medication, patients have access to their provider on demand for any questions. Go to ro.co/infamous. Sign up today and you'll pay just $99 for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's ro.co/infamous.
Campsite Media.
It's March 2021, and Oprah Winfrey is interviewing Meghan Markle. She's sitting in a verdant garden in Santa Barbara, California, wearing a black wrap Armani dress. Two thick wavy strands of her brown hair frame her face.
How were you told to handle tabloids?
Everyone in my world was given very clear directive from the moment the world knew Harry and I were dating to always say no comment. And we did.
Mm-hmm. We, of course, includes the man sitting right next to her, Prince Harry, the second son of then Prince Charles and Princess Diana. It's a lofty position, but do you know the phrase heir and a spare? Well, he's the spare, never to ascend to the role of King of England. And in this interview, he even seems like a spare tire, because this moment is really all about Meghan.
I did anything they told me to do. Of course I did, because it was also through the lens of, and we'll protect you.
Oprah's lapping up Meghan's side of the story, why they left the monarchy, the alleged racism of the royal family, and the mistreatment they received at the hands of the British tabloids.
There's a conversation about how dark your baby is going to be?
That conversation I'm never going to share.
These sorts of bombs are why 17 million people are tuning in. That's more than watched the Oscars that year.
You said in a podcast that it became almost unsurvivable. And that struck me because it sounds like you were in some kind of mental trouble. What was actually going on?
I would sit up at night and I was just like, I don't understand how all of this is being churned out. And again, I wasn't seeing it, but it's almost worse when you feel it through the expression of my mom or my friends or them calling me crying, just like, Meg, they're not protecting you. And I realized that it was all happening just because I was breathing. And I just didn't want to be alive anymore.
This is incredibly moving. How can you not feel sympathetic to someone sharing these emotions, particularly when she's portraying herself as a princess who was caught in Britain in a cage? But then there was an exchange with Oprah that sort of turned the interview on its head.
I mean, that's the sad irony of the last 4 years, is I've advocated for so long for women to use their voice. And then I was silent.
Were you silent? Or were you silenced?
This became the most important and memorable, dare say, iconic moment of this whole interview. Being asked if she was silent or silenced just so perfectly encapsulated what people felt about Meghan, which is, the jury's out. Some people saw her as a heroine who stood up bravely to a powerful and racist family that ruined the life of Princess Diana. Others saw her as a master manipulator, following a careful playbook to control both public opinion and her husband. So who is the real Meghan Markle? From Sony Music Entertainment and Campsite Media, this is Infamous. I'm Natalie Robomet.
And I'm Vanessa Grigoriadis.
So this week, we're going to tell you about the ever-loving shit show that happened in London between Meghan, Harry, and the royal family. Here's Harry describing the way he saw the battle and the way his father, brother, and others seemed aligned against him.
For months, the Windsors had been at war. There had been strife in our ranks, off and on, going back centuries, but this was different. This was a full-scale public rupture, and it threatened to become irreparable. I saw them, shoulder to shoulder. They looked grim, almost menacing. More, they looked tightly aligned. My stomach dropped. Normally they'd be squabbling about one thing or another, but now they appeared to be in lockstep, in league. The thought occurred, hang on, are we meeting for a walk or a duel?
Now, you might think you know the story of this particular duel between the Windsors, Harry, and Meghan. In the most sanitized telling, Meghan is a Hollywood go-getter who clearly just didn't jive with the ancient institution of the monarchy. She finally escaped to Vancouver and then Montecito with Harry, where they're trying to make it as celebrities, not royals.
Yeah, they signed a $20 million deal with Spotify, released a docuseries with Netflix, have a whole new life in California. And more recently, when King Charles got cancer, Harry only returned to England for a brief, like, under 1 hour visit with him.
Oh, it's so crazy. And it's even possible that his dad didn't want to see him for longer than that. Like, his dad booked him for a 15-minute audience.
Oh, so sad. I mean, it just seems like a full-on war between the two sides at this point.
Right, absolutely. And I think most people know something about that. But what you don't know is the kabuki theater of press manipulation that's been going on really from all angles, kind of since Harry and Meghan met. And I had eyes on all of this.
That's right. You reported on Meghan, right?
Yes, for Vanity Fair and for The Cut. And what I saw was maybe the wildest exercise in 21st century press manipulation outside of politics. It all came from the palace, or the firm as it's called, from Meghan's own family, and from Meghan herself. I mean, come on, who believed Meghan when she said stuff like this?
Well, I didn't do any research about what that would mean.
You didn't do any research?
No. I've never looked up my husband online. I just didn't feel a need to because everything that I needed to know, he was sharing with me, right? Or everything that we thought I needed to know, he was telling me.
I mean, who does she think she's fooling? But at the same time, the royal family is also ridiculous.
Well, I think my mom would disagree.
Oh no, why?
You know, my mother is English, and like a lot of English people, specifically of a certain generation, she really, really reveres the monarchy. She loved the Queen's speech on Christmas, the royal wave, the keep calm and carry on mentality, just the whole vibe.
But why? Like, what does she find in it?
I don't know. I think it's because it's tradition. Like, if I had to dig a little deeper, I'd say that the crown is a symbol of an era when Britain was a great empire and not this sort of post-Brexit shit show.
Well, okay. I mean, that makes sense. And we all know that institutions, no matter how iconic, have never seemed so corrupt as they do today. And given all that, it's hard not to support Meghan, as she's become a real monarchy hater. Like, under her breath, she seems like she's singing that old Sex Pistols song about the Queen, just singing it to herself. God save the Queen, the fascist regime. Plus, Meghan is, of course, an American woman, half black, doing war with a family that not so long ago powdered their faces to make them whiter. She's where American meritocracy bumps up against British aristocracy. And who are you going to root for there? Maybe working the press is just what she had to do to succeed in a system stacked against her. So this was my quest as a reporter when I was doing those stories. I needed to find out what Meghan was all about. So I started with the people I thought would know her best, her family. I didn't know that I'd find out that her family was just as dysfunctional as the Windsors, that the two of them would fit into each other by each doing their worst, like a perfectly sized key in a horrible lock. So let's go back to the beginning. Meghan grew up in Los Angeles, the capital city of aspiring to a higher post with a slim chance of getting there. Her father, Tom, was a lighting designer who met her mother, Doria, on the set of General Hospital. if you don't remember General Hospital, it's a soap opera, as overly dramatic as this whole royal story we're telling you. And Meghan's family was not far off from it as well. Tom had two kids from a previous marriage. One of them, Samantha, I was able to track down. So Samantha's like a perky blonde who now has MS and is often in a wheelchair. She lives sort of modestly for someone who once had big dreams in her early life, some of which was spent with Meghan's mom, who was her stepmom.
Doria met our dad when I was 14, and we were in an apartment in Santa Monica. I was Lincoln Junior High School.
She just said that Doria, Meghan's mom, met her dad when Samantha was in junior high school.
It was kind of fun.
The family moved from Santa Monica to Woodland Hills, this sort of sleepy suburb in the valley. And not long after, Doria got pregnant with Meghan.
I was there watching her put cocoa butter on her belly as it grew to prevent stretch marks and watching Meg move inside her belly.
Samantha recalls, or seems to recall, some very sweet moments from Meghan's childhood.
Carry them upstairs, and sometimes you carry them on your shoulders. You laugh as they throw peas all over the kitchen floor, and it was really cool to see her sit in her little high chair and have fun and throw peas all over the floor.
In Samantha's telling, her dad was a practical joker, like the time he put vanilla pudding and chocolate in a diaper.
You're taking empty diaper and put vanilla and chocolate pudding in it just to get a reaction. Just put a spoon in it and come down the stairs eating it just to get everybody shocked. But my dad, he was funny like that. He was like a little walking sitcom.
But of course, life isn't just a sitcom. When Meghan was two, her dad and mom divorced. And according to Samantha, her mom Doria spent a lot of time away, not with Meghan taking care of her. Meghan's dad was the most consistent parent, and generally there was a lot of upheaval, which Samantha kind of plays down.
As a family in Woodland Hills in Los Angeles, we were a normal, blended entertainment family working very hard. I think to say dysfunctional,
But Samantha wasn't really right about that. Meghan's family might actually be one of America's great dysfunctional families, just like her husband Harry's was in Britain. And when they started colliding, the ending would be so explosive that Harry and Meghan would need to escape.
I've always struggled with finding time to manage my finances. At the end of a busy week, the last thing I want to do is spend time budgeting all of my expenses or tracking down customer service teams to cancel old subscriptions I no longer use. But now, I use Rocket Money, and it does all that for me. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. With Rocket Money, I have full control over my subscriptions and a clear view of my expenses. I can see all my subscriptions in one place, and if I see something I don't want, Rocket Money can help me cancel it with just a few taps. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all of the app's features. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/infamous. That's rocketmoney.com/infamous. rocketmoney.com/infamous. Anybody who has a sibling knows that sibling fights are unavoidable. But what if every fight you had was under a microscope, on a global scale? That's the reality for brothers Prince Harry and Prince William. They'd been each other's closest friends and allies since the death of their mother. But that all began to crack as they married and took wildly different approaches to their royal duties. Wondery's podcast, Disintel, is hosted by comedians Sydney Battle and Matt Bellassai. Each episode unpacks one of pop culture's most iconic celebrity feuds, and they recently took a deeper look into the real reason William versus Harry started. It's actually much bigger than these two brothers, stretching back into the history of the British monarchy. Did their feud start with the royal family's mistreatment of Meghan Markle? Or was it something that began much earlier? Follow Disentel on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Infamous from Campside Media.
So when Harry met Meghan, she was playing paralegal Rachel Zane on Suits.
I've got a photographic memory, pretty much a legal superhero. I can recite the Constitution forwards, backwards, and sideways because I read it once when I was 7.
If you haven't seen it, Suits is a sort of schlocky legal drama, more popular than Prestige.
I'm Rachel Zane. I'll be giving you your orientation.
Wow, you're pretty.
Good. You've hit on me. We can get it out of the way that I'm not interested.
But she was interested in Harry. She'd met a bunch of Brits while she was filming Suits in Toronto, and then she'd gone to spend a little time in London over a summer, where she was set up through those Toronto connections on a date with Harry.
You hear that? That is the sound of hearts breaking all around the world. It is reported that Prince Harry is dating actress Meghan Markle.
The world's most eligible bachelor.
That new transatlantic alliance.
Prince Harry, he seems like he's fallen for somebody. Rumored, her name is Meghan Markle.
She's on the show Suits, in case you were wondering, like, how do we know her? She's the brainy beauty who's captured Prince Harry's heart.
Actress Meghan Markle has reportedly won the heart of royal bad boy Prince Harry.
Woo!
This was back in 2016, and it was pretty much on from the beginning. It was a whirlwind romance. Camping in Botswana for their third date, trips back and forth to where Meghan was shooting in Canada, a delicious few months of secret romance before the British tabloids revealed their relationship. Or before someone tipped them off to it. In her book, The Palace Papers, Inside the House of Windsor, Tina Brown writes,
in the first round of coverage, she was portrayed as Grace Kelly Redux, an actress, humanitarian, and gender equality campaigner, making it hard not to believe that the initial leak came from Meghan's side, though a servant tip from the House of York has been fingered.
At this point, everyone cool was describing Meghan this way, as a Grace Kelly and a breath of fresh air. Except for the British tabloids. Some of them even attacked her on the basis of race, which, I mean, the royals have never been the best on race, but still.
When they said, Harry's girl is straight out of Compton, I was like, are they talking about Serena? I'm not from Compton. I've never lived in Compton. My mom doesn't live in Compton. But by the way, what's wrong with Compton? My girl Serena's from there.
There was bad press about Meghan for someone putting a facsimile of her on Pornhub. Like that was her fault. Just weird press. Harry was livid over it. Meghan was a keeper for him. And I'm sure she was upset too. But also now, she was a cause celeb. People were rushing to her defense all over. And they also started loving Harry even more for protecting his girlfriend. Especially because, for a prince, Harry has had a hard life. Diana died when he was only 12 years old, and he never fully moved past it.
How could someone so far beyond everyday language remain so real, so palpably present, so exquisitely vivid in my mind? How was it possible that I could see her, clear as the swan skimming towards me on that indigo lake? How could I hear her laughter, loud as the songbirds in the bare trees, still? There was so much I didn't remember, because I was so young when she died, but the greater miracle was all that I did. Her devastating smile, her vulnerable eyes, her childlike love of movies and music and clothes and sweets, and us. Oh, how she loved my brother and me. Obsessively, she once confessed to an interviewer. Well, mummy, vice versa.
After Diana's accident, Harry could never quite feel at home anywhere except during his military service. And he spent a lot of time in Africa doing charity work, which was sort of the only place he could hide from the public. He felt attacked by the press, who of course were the ones who followed his mother down that tunnel, chased her with their motorbikes. He hated them all his life.
The Spice Girls concert represented my first public appearance since the funeral, and I knew, through intuition, through bits of overheard conversations, that the public's curiosity about my welfare was running high. I remember stepping onto the red carpet, screwing a smile onto my face, suddenly wishing I was in my bed at St. James's Palace. Beside me was Baby Spice, wearing white plastic shoes with chunky 12-inch platform heels. I fixated on those heels while she fixated on my cheeks. She kept pinching them. So chubby, so cute. She and the other Spices were cooing at me, saying things I didn't understand, while bantering with the journalists who were shouting at me. Harry, over here. Harry, Harry, how are you doing, Harry? Questions that weren't questions. Questions that were traps. Questions that were flung at my head like cleavers. The journalists didn't give a toss how I was doing. They were trying to get me to say something messy, newsy.
Harry was well aware that as a royal, he was supposed to be playing footsie with the press, to use them to his advantage, to manage them. Just like in politics, the royals' job is to be public figures, and that goes with press management. Consider this story, which Harry thought of as a low point among the Windsors. He'd been taken to task for drug use as a teenager, and his family allegedly managed the tabloids by allowing the information to be printed in the paper, if Charles came out smelling like a rose.
Surely, I said, Pa will do something. No. Pa's office had decided on a different approach. Rather than telling the editor to call off the dogs, the palace was opting to play ball with her. This spin doctor had decided that the best approach in this case would be to spin me, right under the bus. Amid all this unpleasantness, all this extortion and gamesmanship, the spin doctor had discovered one silver lining, one shiny consolation prize for Pa. Pa would now be presented to the world as the harried single dad coping with a drug-addled child.
Harry hated things like this. They made him feel tiny and insignificant and even more purposeless than usual, because he was nowhere near next in line to succeed the Queen. But marrying a go-getter like Meghan, that felt like the golden path to purposefulness.
So I don't ever remember personally feeling the negative connotation behind the word ambitious until I started dating my now husband.
Soon they started planning their fantasy wedding. And that's when the worms start crawling out of their holes. Remember when Samantha said their family wasn't dysfunctional?
I was so proud of her born affairs experience. I thought, wow, my little baby sister is becoming a woman now. I don't bully my sister. I love my sister.
Well, not bullying her sister might not have been the whole truth. Because Samantha's brother, Meghan's half-brother, Tom Markle Jr., he starts talking to the press. Here's a quote he gave British tabloid The Mirror. Meg likes to portray herself as a humanitarian, a people's person, and a charitable person, but she is none of those things to her family. She is giving the greatest performance of her life. There's a whole different side of her that has started to surface, and it's ugly to see. I've read that Meg wants to be like Diana. Diana was worshipped by everyone in the world. She was loved for the right reasons. That's what Meg wants, but I don't think that's going to happen. She's not genuine like Diana.
Meghan's own family is coming out and saying she isn't to be trusted, including Samantha.
So what happened? So the initial interview that you did, right, where you said the thing about her not being suitable for the royal family?
Like, no, my very first interview, I said she's a combination of Condoleezza Rice and Lady Diana.
Well, maybe Samantha did say she was a combination of Condoleezza Rice and Lady Diana, but she stopped saying that pretty quick. Despite telling me she'd never want to bully her sister, as early as November 2016, Samantha was calling Meghan, quote, narcissistic and selfish. And some of the interviews she did over time were paid.
So how much have you made in the end from giving paid interviews?
Here's the way it goes. This interview with you is not paid. One of the interviews that I did for Good Morning Britain and a couple of the little Lifetime shows that they turn into, however much they turn into, if those paid $3,000, $3,500, or some interviews that were $1,500 or
$3,000. Samantha starts bad-mouthing Meghan on Twitter and starts giving interviews to people who will listen or pay. which, given the proclivities of the British to eagerly consume tabloid coverage at the breakfast table with their orange marmalade, is a lot of people.
Some of the bride's family don't know yet if they'll be invited to Windsor Castle, including Meghan's half-sister Samantha Markle, who's made plenty of her own headlines in the lead-up to the royal wedding.
And Kensington Palace is not commented, but you guys, to be a fly on the wall when he gets to meet Harry and the royal family.
Then Harry gives a BBC interview where he says this.
It's the family that I suppose she's never had.
Now, to be clear, Harry's family is pretty messed up too. He's not close with his dad, Charles.
Most of us in our lives have to fill out applications listing our profession and occupation. You don't have to do that.
No. Not always, but sometimes.
If you did, what would you put down?
I would list it as worrying about this country and its inhabitants. That's my particular duty. I find myself born into this particular position. I'm determined to make the most of it. And to do whatever I can to help, and I hope leave things behind a little bit better than I found them. It's hard to say it's a profession, but I think it is a profession, actually, doing what I'm doing. Because if you tried it for a bit, you might find out how difficult it is. I just only hope that when I'm dead and gone, they might appreciate it a little bit more.
Here's how Harry sums it up with a memory from his childhood.
Evenings, I'd shout downstairs, "Going to bed, Pa!" He'd always shout back cheerfully, "I'll be there shortly, darling boy." True to his word, minutes later, he'd be sitting on the edge of my bed. He never forgot that I didn't like the dark, so he gently tickled my face until I fell asleep. I have the fondest memories of his hands on my cheeks, my forehead, then waking to find him gone, magically, the door always considerately left open a crack. Other than those fleeting moments, however, Pa and I mostly coexisted. He had trouble communicating, trouble listening, trouble being intimate face-to-face.
Charles, it seems, was the epitome of the British stiff upper lip. Even if he was known for trying to get attention on global warming way before most people were thinking about it, and advocating for organic food, he was also the very definition of don't coddle, don't complain, and be sure to always talk about the weather rather than your feelings. But the Markles, they have no problem communicating. In fact, they can't shut up. Back in the 90s, Pepsi and Coca-Cola were in a heated race to try and win loyal customers by any means necessary. But when Pepsi launched an ambitious promotion that encouraged people to buy Pepsi and redeem points for prizes, they overlooked their own fine print in a major way. On each episode of Wondery's podcast, The Big Flop, comedians join host Misha Brown to chronicle one of the biggest pop culture fails of all time and try to answer the age-old question. Who thought this was a good idea? Like, who at Pepsi thought it would be a good idea to advertise that people could earn enough points to redeem a military jet as a prize? When they launched their Pepsi points system, they never imagined somebody might actually try to snag it. But a 23-year-old did. And suddenly, Pepsi owed him a jet. Follow The Big Flop on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to The Big Flop early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Welcome to True Spies, the podcast that takes you deep inside the greatest secret missions of all time.
Suddenly out of the darkness appeared Bin Laden.
You'll meet the people who live life undercover. What do they know? What are their skills? And what would you do in their position?
Vengeance felt good. Seeing these people pay for what they'd done felt righteous.
True Spies from Spyscape Studios, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Infamous from Campside Media.
So Harry had said that the royals, meaning the Windsor family, was the family Meghan never had. But Samantha rebuffs this. On Twitter, she says, actually, she has a large family who were always there with her and for her.
She was acting like she had no family, and I was like, whoa, back up here. I mean, and I had just talked to her a year and a half before on the phone, and she said, hey, babe, I love you. Let's keep in touch. I'm so glad we caught up. And she was changing and she was being different and kind of freaky because she was overwhelmed by pain.
Mm-hmm.
Like, recently, families were being isolated and ghosted,
mm-hmm.
like non-existent.
For Megan's part, she basically said she didn't know her evil stepsister and the rest of her embarrassing family.
My half-sister, who I hadn't seen for over a decade, and that was only for a day and a half, suddenly it felt like she was everywhere.
I don't know your middle name. I don't know your birthday. You're telling these people that you raised me and you've coined me Princess Pushy?
I don't remember seeing her when I was a kid at my dad's house, if and when they would come around. And then the last time that I saw her that I remember is when I was in my early 20s.
Now, this turned out to be true, it seems. She didn't really know Samantha or that half-brother. So who was the villain here? I mean, this wasn't really Megan's fault. But her dad, Thomas Sr., Megan truly knew very well and loved. But things also went pear-shaped with him. Living on a pensioner's allowance, Tom Sr. had moved out of LA and had retired to Rosarita, Baja California. It's a sleepy Mexican town, not a lot going on, and the press descended on it, printing pictures of him looking like an unglamorous, slightly overweight retiree. Not quite the image Megan wanted to portray. Then, before Megan and Harry's wedding, some conveniently different paparazzi pictures of Megan's dad started to appear. There he was, getting measured for a suit by a tailor. There he was in a local Starbucks, reading a book about England titled Images of Britain, A Pictorial Journey Through History. There he was in an internet cafe, reading an article about Harry and Meghan. The shots painted a grainy, long-lens picture of a lonely, doting father, reading up on England, desperate for the chance to walk his soon-to-be princess down the aisle. It was image rehab for someone who had previously been depicted as a slob. The tabloids ate it up. But weirdly, the whole thing was a setup.
Mr. Markle allegedly staged photos of himself for the paparazzi, selling them for a reported $100,000.
This is tabloid fodder. They're going crazy with this story this morning.
Megan probably wanted Tom at the wedding, but she also didn't want something crazy to happen. But it was insult to injury from her perspective when, behind the scenes, at the royal palaces in Britain, Harry and Meghan claimed that Charles and others were pressuring them to get Meghan's dad to be quiet, thinking even perhaps that it was Meghan's fault that it had turned into such a fiasco. And then, tragedy. Even as Meghan and Harry were calling her dad, trying to figure out how to calm down the situation, Tom Sr. suffered a minor heart attack. And then another.
We just broke a big, fat story on our website. Meghan Markle was supposed to be walked down the aisle by her father, and we found out from her father, not only will he not do that, he's not going to attend the wedding at all.
And I'm finding out that you're not coming to our wedding through a tabloid.
Meghan's father, 73-year-old Thomas Markle, reportedly suffering a heart attack after igniting a scandal these past few days with staged paparazzi photos that went viral.
And then suddenly they were saying he was in the hospital. It's like, what's going on? Please just pick up the phone. Like, what's going on? We're not mad. Just please pick up the phone. Like,
he told me he had a heart attack 6 days ago.
Which is crazy.
Calling.
This is not him saying, oh, I don't want to be there.
No, I get it. I'm saying.
And the world is watching this drama play out.
He feels so bad for everybody. Free Thomas Markle.
Free Thomas Markle, man. Tommy Marks, baby.
Mr. Markle, we didn't ask for this attention.
How you don't have your daddy at your wedding?
But the wedding had to go forward.
We're about 24 hours away from the royal wedding. And
more than 2 billion people worldwide are expected to watch the wedding on TV.
Harry, Meghan.
There is so much excitement in the air.
In so many ways, this a royal wedding unlike any other. The big reveal in just 24 hours.
May 19th, 2018, at the same chapel in Windsor Castle where Harry's ancestors lay buried, Meghan takes her final steps towards becoming a princess. A stirring soprano serenades her as she walks slowly down the aisle, arm in arm with not her own dad, but Harry's father, Prince Charles. She's wearing a stunning white Givenchy gown with a very dramatic 16-foot veil. Stitched into the veil are embroidered flowers, one for each of the 53 countries of the Commonwealth. Perhaps a symbolic nod to the role Meghan hopes to play in the royal family going forward. Here she is, a mixed-race American turned princess, who could bring the royal family into modernity and unite the Commonwealth countries, which are overwhelmingly populated by people of color. Securing the veil on Meghan's bridal updo is the Queen Mary's diamond bandeau tiara. It's her something borrowed, except this is a $2 million headpiece borrowed from Queen Elizabeth II's collection. But the story behind the tiara is a little less genial. Apparently, Meghan had wanted to borrow one of Princess Diana's tiaras, but had been encouraged by the royal family to choose something else. Then, the Queen's personal dresser dragged her feet on actually getting the tiara to Meghan and Harry. But now Meghan had it, and she was about to marry Harry. Watching her nuptials are a coterie of A-list celebrities: Serena Williams, David and Victoria Beckham, Priyanka Chopra, Elton John, Oprah, George and Amal Clooney. Notably absent, anyone from her family, except her mom. To detractors, the guest list seemed more like a who's who of who they wanted to be associated with, rather than beloved friends and family. I mean, according to a story recounted by Rachel Johnson, Boris's sister, when George and Amal Clooney were at one point asked how they knew the couple, they replied, "We don't." Because if Meghan was going to be a royal celebrity, she needed top-tier celebrity friends. This was the game of image-making everyone was engaged with. And it wasn't just the royal family or Meghan's family manipulating the press, weaving their own narratives. It was Meghan, too. Next time on Infamous.
Hi, I'm Meghan, and this is Archetypes, my podcast about the labels and tropes that try to hold women back.
I do have an email from me to my wedding planner at the time being like, this is totally random, but this actress on Suits would like to do some calligraphy at the wedding.
Half in, half out. Have our own jobs, but also work in support of the Queen.
Britain is in shock this morning.
A dramatic and shocking announcement from Prince Harry and Meghan Markle.
Announcing they're taking a step back from their royal duties. Prince.